Welcome, everybody, to another Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Brett Dawson. I'm in Oklahoma City. This is a very weird setup. I'm not accustomed to this. I am in Oklahoma City. Eric Horn is with me. He's in Oklahoma City, but he's not actually with me. We are in different places. This is not normally what we do, Eric.
No, I'm at home. You're at home. We are too lazy to come together, which is okay. That's what the summer's for. Y'all are just going to have to deal with our echoey Saturday morning shenanigans.
Yeah, no high-end studio work today. It's just, you know, it's too far. I just can't go to work. It's 10 minutes away from me. I can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just got to take time to do things for yourself and get your me time together. And I don't think people are going to be disappointed with the fact that we weren't in the same room recording a podcast. I think the listenership can deal with that for one day.
Hopefully,
and we'll probably wind up doing this again too. It happens from time to time. They're used to it from the road podcasts during the season. So, we're going back lo-fi. We're kicking it old school today. So
exactly. So, as I said, I'm in Oklahoma City, which means I'm back from Summer League. I've actually been back from Summer League for a couple of days. A few days. I was out there for the pool play portion of the Summer League, not the tournament portion, which is over. The Thunder, much like the regular season Thunder, out in the first round of the playoffs in the Summer League. So they lost their first round tournament game. That's a single. It's weird. It's technically a single elimination event because once you lose once, you can't win the tournament. But you do get a consolation game that is completely meaningless. The Thunder did win that game in thrilling fashion. Deontay Burton with a game winner. As thrilling as Summer League can possibly get in the consolation round. But exciting because Deontay Burton did lots of fun stuff. Full disclosure, I did not watch that game. But I did see the end, and I did see some highlights. And Eric, what I thought we might do, we talked about this a little bit, is just kind of go through Summer League a little bit. Talk about what we can take away from it. We'll eventually talk about Carmelo Anthony probably because we always do. But we'll start with Summer League.
Yeah. You know, I guess the first takeaway, we'll start from the end. I was surprised at the game of Deontay Burton and, not just the physicalness of a guy like that, because obviously, if a guy's 6'5", 250, and he's playing on the wing, he has some sort of athleticism to him. Like, he's not just going to be rumbling around there if he doesn't have some kind of athletic burst. And you could see in the last game from some of the highlights, this guy's clearly a guy who can throw down some monster dunks when he gets the opportunity to get like a running start. But Deontay Burton showed me more game than I even expected from him, from a guy who played in the Korean League last year. He plays under control for the most part, has pretty good vision. And it was just surprising for me to see that from a guy who I hadn't heard much about coming into Summer League. You know, our eyes were kind of set on some of these younger guys like Diallo and Hervey and Hall and Ferguson, but I think Deontay Burton is, I mean, he's definitely a guy who's going to pop for the G League team. I wouldn't dare speculate on if he's going to have any kind of Thunder impact. My first guess would be no, but he's a guy that's going to be fun to watch in the G League, and he's certainly going to be one of the best players on that team as soon as he steps on the floor.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy in the sense that he looks like a guy who's like 6'1". You know, like you've seen some guys like him who don't quite, maybe they don't quite make it in the NBA, but they're really good college players. But the reason they don't make it is they're 6 foot or 6'1", and they're like as broad as they are tall. He's built like that, but he's 6'5", and he really gets off the floor. He's really entertaining. He shot the ball a little better, I think, than we probably should expect him to shoot it. He was not a good three-point shooter in college. He was okay his last year at Iowa State. He went to Iowa State, which is the University of Transfer, because he started out at Marquette and then went there. Played a year in Korea. Didn't shoot the ball great in Korea either as a three-point shooter, but he really scored. He can do a lot of stuff. I had somebody ask me today on Twitter, you know, can they transfer that two-way contract to a full-time NBA contract? They can. It's presumptuous to think that's going to matter. They could. I don't think he's going to get a roster spot. I do think he'll keep the two-way spot probably because that's not a given. I mean, like, the two-way contracts are not guaranteed. Last year, up through sometime in January, you can actually just cut a guy who's on a two-way contract and just immediately bring another guy on one. The Clippers did it once in the same day in January. They just moved one guy, they cut a guy, and then moved another guy into a two-way. So you have all kinds of flexibility. That contract has very little guarantee. There's not much protection for the players there. And in fact, it was suggested to me that maybe they signed him to a two-way just with the idea of keeping everybody else away from him because he might look so good in summer league, which turned out to be true. That was suggested to me by somebody outside. I don't know what the Thunder's plan is with him. But he's really fun. You know, I think he'll be a guy who, you know, I'm not going to suggest that he's going to get people to go watch the Blue because people don't really go to G League games. But he's fun, and he made summer league really fun. And I think he's a great example of how summer league can be entertaining and interesting, and you also have to be careful about how much you read into it.
Yeah, like, I think that, you know, as I said, I think he's a guy who's definitely going to be able to be an impact player at the G League level. Like, I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah.
But I would just think it was really presumptuous if anybody were to think that he could be a roster player, because I feel like there's more fish to be fried when it comes to the Thunder and their roster. And by that, I mean guys that aren't even on the roster right now currently, or guys who aren't even on the team. It would probably benefit the Thunder to keep those roster spots open as long as possible, whether it's for a Carmelo Anthony trade, which we'll probably get into later in the program.
Oh, we will, because it's a podcast and it's Carmelo Anthony, the two.
Yeah, as the mellow turns. And then, you know, there's still some possibilities that some of those guys that they drafted could end up getting roster spots as well, whether it's a Diallo or, you know, a Hall or a Hervey, Daniel Hamilton.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't discount the two-way guys from last year, Daniel Hamilton and PJ Dozier, as guys who will compete. I think Hamilton is the more likely. This is going to be weird because everybody thinks that, and I think I agree, that PJ Dozier had a better summer league. But I think Daniel Hamilton is the more likely guy to get a spot, just because I think, as we talked about this the last time on the podcast, he's on the Thunder track. Like, he's on that 2 years with the Blue, sort of Dakari Johnson, Josh Huestis track, where at some point you say, all right, we have to give this guy an actual NBA look to just see what he is. And so I think he's the more likely of that group. But that's not a guarantee either, because as you say, the Carmelo thing could end up, I mean, that could be a 1-for-2. Because of the way the contracts work out. So they could take two people back in a trade for Carmelo. That could, if they keep both those guys, that's going to do a little something to the spot. And then I guess we can transition into another thing I think we probably want to talk about out of summer league. Right now, Hamidou Diallo looks like a guy who's going to fight for a spot on the team.
Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned it several times on Twitter. I mean, the athleticism is just obvious. It's unbelievable how athletic the guy is, but, you know, he's one of those open floor weapons. And then the Thunder has talked about this for years now, liking to get out in transition. We saw it last year and the year prior. They're just so much more comfortable as a transition team in the half court. It doesn't look like they have a clear plan. And they really struggle to generate offense in the half court. But when they're getting out in transition, whether it's guys going directly to the rim and Russell Westbrook finding them, Steven Adams sealing guys off and getting that mismatch in terms of his size or guys spotting up from three, they're just so much more fluid in transition. And Hamidou Diallo just fits right into that. On the NBA level, you don't know if a guy like that is going to, it's going to immediately translate in terms of his intelligence and being in the right spots. I mean, he's still got to come a long way as a shooter.
Long way.
But it was promising to see a guy like that come in immediately, have some splash plays, play hard, rebound really well. I mean, I thought the rebounding was probably the best part of his game, being able to rebound and initiate the break in certain instances, particularly in that third game. He had a big highlight where he pulls down the defensive rebound and goes coast to coast for a dunk. It's just one more athletic non-shooter the Thunder can put on the floor.
That's right.
But You saw why the Thunder bought that guy's rights. You saw why they went and got a guy like that, because, look, frankly, he probably should have went higher in the draft. There just aren't many guys at the collegiate level that can jump with that guy. And really a good asset to have in the program, because if you get a second round pick for him and you buy a guy like that cheap, and he does somehow happen to manage to develop a jump shot, then you got yourself a steal of a prospect.
Yeah, there's a couple things with him. One, you know, it's summer league. That's the most important thing. Like yep. I had people, you know, there were people on Twitter who were getting so excited about him and saying like he's better than Ferguson right now.
He's
and
better it's like, than Terrence Ferguson.
Yeah, just like everybody, calm down. You know, because here's the thing, right? We've actually seen Terrence Ferguson. He had a bad summer league. I'm not gonna like he did not look good. They threw some new stuff at him. He didn't adjust to it well. He didn't look super comfortable with the ball the way you wanted him to. You know, he's more advanced than a lot of the guys there, and so you thought just that would put him over the top, and it didn't. And Billy Donovan said, look, that's not how it works. You know, he's learning all this new stuff. Just because he's played doesn't mean he's going to look better than everybody else, and that's fair. But the one thing you have to say when you say all this stuff about how he didn't play well, we've seen him do stuff in NBA games against NBA players.
Yeah.
We saw him score 24 points in a game. We've seen him make some really big shots off the bench. We've seen him play in meaningful minutes in games the Thunder really wanted and needed to win, and he's performed in those games. He's performed badly in some of them as well, but he's done some stuff in those games, and let's just wait. Let's see if Hamidou Diallo can, A, make the team, and B, do any of that stuff before we start saying that the two guys, you know, comparing these two guys who are both going to be 20 when training camp starts.
Yeah, and you know, it's really, if you really think about it, it's not really saying much to say, let's say Hamidou Diallo is better than Terrence Ferguson.
Yeah.
That's not really saying that much.
Right.
Like Terrence Ferguson, look, I mean, given he was 19 years old last year and the learning curve is steep, going from Australia to, you know, the NBA. You know, Terrence Ferguson really wasn't like a rotation NBA player last year. He was a guy who the Thunder just basically gave the opportunity.
Yeah.
And he got more opportunity by default because, you know, the Thunder was just so decrepit kind of at that shooting guard position, particularly, you know, with Andre Robertson starting out with his struggles and then he got injured as well. You know, they needed somebody to fill in that role. Alex Abrines, not a very good defender. He had a pretty bad, you know, start to the season until Robertson got hurt and he got his defense right. Josh Huestis just, you know, Billy Donovan just doesn't trust him.
Yeah, it's just not safe there. It's
like, hey, let's try this 19-year-old who really probably shouldn't be starting NBA games.
Right.
And, you know, aside from playing against Los Angeles, Terrence Ferguson really wasn't a good player last year.
No,
but like,
and that's absolutely, that is absolutely true. And, like, maybe Hamidou Diallo could have come in a similar situation and done similar things. Now, Ferguson right now, today, and all last season was a better three-point shooter. He wasn't a good three-point shooter statistically.
No.
But, like, just mechanically, he's a better shooter right now than Diallo is. But, like, as you said, Terrence Ferguson was the 21st pick in a really good, deep draft. And, like, Hamidou Diallo in a weaker draft was 45th and probably should have been a little higher than that. Like, just as you said, just strictly based on the fact that he, not this year, but last year went to the combine and jumped 44 and a half inches in the air. You know, like that probably should have gotten him drafted a little higher. And by the way, he was a guy who, you know, I mean, at least our understanding was kind of on the move where he took a little tumble, but there were some teams in that 30 to 35 range who were interested. They just happened to get some other guys that they liked. So he could have pretty easily gone 35 in this draft instead of 45. And it's that gap isn't that big. That said, like, again, let's see him make the team. Let's see him, you know, make some free throws. Let's see if mechanically his jump shot can make. I mean, he doesn't have to make free throws. Nobody else on the team does. But, like, let's just see if mechanically he can do some of the things that he has to do to make a jump from, like, doing this stuff in summer league to doing it at the NBA level. That said, like, all the stuff you want to build from is there. He's not lost. He's not lazy. And he's a great athlete.
And I think you mentioned this before when it came to Diallo, and you being there would know better than I would, but they simplified things for him.
For sure.
They complicated things for Terrence Ferguson on purpose because Terrence Ferguson, you know, is a year ahead of him in terms of the NBA track.
Yeah.
So
they know Ferguson can get out in the open and can shoot a corner three. Like, they know he's not a great shooter, but they know he can make some of those, and they know what he does in transition, just running the floor without the ball in his hands.
Yeah, so they put more responsibility on Ferguson's shoulders than they would at Diallo. And that kind of lends itself to Diallo getting more opportunities like that. And look, let's be completely honest about some of the strengths of Diallo that probably wouldn't translate to the Thunder. Homeboy pulling down the defensive rebound and going coast to coast. Yeah, that's Russell Westbrook's
good luck
department.
Good luck, buddy.
Like he's gonna be getting his butt out on the wing like an Andre Robertson and cutting baseline, which we did see some of. We saw those guys cut baseline backdoor, which I thought was cool. Just to see those guys move off the ball and not be as stagnant as we typically see Thunder teams. But look, Hamidou Diallo is not going to be doing some of the same things. He might be doing some of those things on the G League team. But look, Daniel Hamilton is going to be doing a lot of that for the G League team. He's going to be pulling down rebounds and initiating the break. Whether that's a good idea for the Thunder or not, I'll leave that up to the listener. But look,
we should talk about Daniel Hamilton a little bit too.
Yeah, the point is Hamidou Diallo's got a long way to go. It's not out of the realm of possibility he can make the roster. I mean, we didn't really give Terrence Ferguson much of a chance of making the roster last year.
Correct.
We thought he'd be a primarily G League guy, and he spent pretty much the entire season with the Thunder. So
yeah, he played most of the games. I think he played in 60 games or 61. Yeah.
So, you know, jury's still out on Mr. Diallo. Who do we want to talk about next? Want to talk about P.J. Dozier?
Let's talk about P.J. Dozier and Daniel Hamilton as kind of a
P.J. Dozier, Daniel Hamilton combination.
Yeah, they were the two-way guys last year. If Deonte Burton is going to keep that two-way contract, then again, that's not guaranteed, but he certainly looks like a guy who, if you have him in your program, you kind of don't want to let him go. So I would imagine they're probably going to keep him on that two-way deal, which means one of those guys won't be on a two-way deal. Now, the one thing that could happen is that Daniel Hamilton moves up to the Thunder and P.J. Dozier stays on a two-way deal. That's a possibility. Maybe one of the two could make a spot. As we talked about with Hamilton, I just want to touch on this with Hamilton real quick. I think he's in position to have a chance. You know, he's going to get a look because of where he is in the sort of progression. There are times when I look at Daniel Hamilton, and it was the third game, at the beginning of the third game, where he looks really under control, and you think like, okay, I get it. I see what they're talking about with this guy. Like, I see the appeal. But those things don't last. He is not a very under control guy. He makes a lot of poor decisions. He takes some really questionable shots. During the comeback they had in the first round of the tournament, he took a terrible three-pointer that went in, actually. But it was like, what are you doing when he shot it? So he just makes a lot of, you know, like for a guy who's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, he does make questionable decisions. Last year was the first time he ever played full-time point guard. I didn't really know that until I talked to him about it this week. So, like, he's got a whole lot to learn about just kind of playing under control. The one thing that you sort of like about him is he does have good size. He's 6'6". And he can't put the ball on the floor. And if you wanted to play this way where you want to say, you know, we're going to move the ball more, like one of the things you got to do if you're going to move the ball more is you got to have more guys who can just put it on the floor, get by a guy, and make a play. So whether that's getting to the rim or just kicking out to the perimeter, just swinging the ball somewhere, you need guys who can do that. And he, in theory, can do that. And maybe if you take some of that point guard stuff off his plate, that makes it a little easier for him if he's just a guy who's on the wing and he can put the ball on the floor and go. The question is like whether these other guys are just kind of better at that stuff than he is. He's in a weird place, I think.
Yeah, it's an awkward fit because I think we talked about this off the podcast, but he does a lot of the things that Russell Westbrook does without the explosion.
Yeah.
And without the ability to score at the rim or hit the mid-range.
Right.
And Westbrook, because he
Westbrook makes a ton of bad decisions as well, but also a ton of smart ones. He makes a ton of really difficult, challenging passes, but like he can make them. And Hamilton shoots for those a lot. He tries to make those plays.
Yes.
Tries is the keyword.
You can and look, people can have their pros and cons about Russell Westbrook too. I do as well. If you can build a championship team around a guy like Russell Westbrook, who is sloppy with the ball at times, he makes poor decisions with the ball, who takes poor shots. But you can't have that from your backup point guard. Like, your backup point guard has to be sound. It has to be somebody who's not going to take anything off the table. At the least, is going to be able to level the playing field or just keep the ship upright. Like, Raymond Felton did that last year. And there were some times that Raymond Felton took some bad shots. But for the most part, Raymond Felton was good. He had a 2-1. He had a, like, 2.5-1. Assist to turnover ratio last year.
Yeah.
Raymond Felton was a solid player.
Yeah, yeah. His problem is more the bogging down in isolation stuff. Like, that happens too much, but like, whatever. That happens with every player on this team. Like, literally every guy that holds the ball.
But it definitely can't happen with your third point guard, Daniel Hamilton.
Right.
Like, who is a gifted player. You do like his creativity and his improvisation.
But, a really good rebounder. Like, he's a great rebounder for a six.
Good
six
rebounder.
Guard.
He can pick out a pass at times, but it's like sometimes you drive into three guys, throw a behind the back pass, and you're like, what? Russell Westbrook, he'll recognize mismatches really quickly. I think it takes Daniel Hamilton time to do that. It's a process for him, and he's still learning to play that position. To reference your story, I really enjoyed that story that you wrote about his coach, you know, saying that he was a point guard or putting the ball in his hands when he was late in his high school career. I thought that was a good story, and it kind of spoke to, like, you know, this guy's still growing. I don't know if that merits a roster spot, that he's still growing. But like we've seen, it's the Thunder track. You play 2 years in the G League.
Yep.
And then you graduate, so to speak, to the big club. I don't necessarily think that that's the right plan. I just think it should be like a pure kind of,
yeah, who's the
look,
best?
If this guy's going to make our team better, then we need to put this guy on the roster.
Right.
It should be more of that.
Well, and especially, and think, like, he would cost more than Hamidou Diallo, for example, or Kevin Hervey or whoever, you know, Devin Hall, who, like, he would be more expensive than those guys because he's got, I don't know, actually, maybe I shouldn't say that because I don't know how the two-way counts in a year of service. I don't know what that does. Maybe he's the same price.
Yeah, and one of those guys that we forgot to throw into the Thunder 2 years in the G League and graduate program is Samaje Christian. He was actually a guy who did that twice, too. And in his second year, he actually went to Italy. But he was a guy who spent 2 years in the pipeline before they gave him that that guaranteed contract.
Yeah, that'll excite everybody for Daniel Hamilton's prospects to compare him to Samaje Christian.
Yeah, compare him to one of the worst players in the NBA when he was there that one year. I mean,
he'll always have that three pointer. Just like
he will. He will always have that three pointer
and a couple of heaves, a couple of quarter ending heaves. That was like also the Samaje Christian special.
We've never done an in-depth study on this, but he might have been one of the best guys at the end of quarters in terms of just shot percentage, making those quarter heaves to beat the buzzer.
Especially compared to like his overall offensive production. Like what percentage of it came from shots he just chucked in at the buzzer?
Yeah, he was great at it, and he was willing to take it.
Yeah, so, did not worry about his percentages because, I mean, come on, they were bad. So it didn't really matter that much. But, like, I'm with you on Hamilton. I get it. I get why they might take a look. I also think, like, some of this should depend on what happens with the rest of the roster. Because, like, he doesn't look like a guy who's going to play a lot of minutes. And you're going to have a lot of guys fighting for spots who aren't going to play a lot of minutes. And what we don't know yet is, like, what it's going to look like when they have some other players. They probably are going to add some more players or a player or two. So it's going to be interesting to see. I liked Dozier in the summer. It's summer league again. And like, I don't know what to make of it, but I liked his ability to kind of push it, and he got a rebound a couple times and went like, I think he's intriguing. He's also got good size. He's not as far along in the process as Hamilton is. But there's stuff that I sort of like about him, whether he's an NBA player or not, I don't know, but he was intriguing looking.
Yeah. And he was a guy that it looked like the Thunder put a little bit more on his plate too, in terms of the ball handling. And I think you saw him kind of hit a comfort zone in that game against Memphis. Now, granted, they got smoked for a good portion of that game against Memphis. I think they gave up like a 17-0 run or something like that. But in the comeback in the second half, Dozier was a big part of that. And in the fourth quarter, you know, he hits Hamidou Diallo for a bounce pass on the break, and Diallo goes up real quick for the dunk. All of a sudden, the game gets down to like 2 points. They came back from, you know, 21 down, and then they got the game close. And a lot of that came through Dozier as a primary ball handler. And you know, credit to Daniel Hamilton in that second half too. He actually, you know, really facilitated some offense well. I think they started on like an 11-0 run to start that third quarter. But like, you saw those guys slowly start to build confidence as the summer league went on. It was good for Dozier to kind of make up for some of the ball handling mistakes he had earlier in that game against Memphis. He had some bad possessions in the fourth quarter, which you know, Jaren Jackson for Memphis was just that kid's a freak, man. I guess he's not 19 years old yet, and he's just, correct, he's got a presence, man. He's He's 6'11". He's really athletic. He's smart. He's got good touch around the rim, and he's just a guy like he's got that kind of. I hate saying this because people are gonna freak out, but like that Rudy Gobert kind of, Stephen Adams, like you can't patrol the paint, like you can't come in the paint situation, and Dozier learned that because he like tried to drive at the guy and he swatted the crap out of one of his shots at the end of the fourth quarter. But you know that's kind of the learning process for PJ Dozier. In terms of being that ball handler, I think he had a couple of possessions at the end of that game where the Thunder had a chance to keep it to within two possessions or like cut it to one, and he made some bad decisions with the ball. But like, I like what I've seen from him in terms of them giving him more responsibility and being able to create a little bit more. Like, that's what those guys need to be doing in summer league anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, if he makes the Thunder. Maybe he'll get to play in some games and we'll get to hear about his jersey number a lot, like a whole lot, like from the announcers who are calling the game.
Oh man, that's all they would talk about.
It was a hot topic. Yeah.
It was all they would talk about on the broadcast during the games because it's summer league and you run out of stuff to talk about. And next thing you know, and you know, half these announcers don't even know who the guys are. They were calling Deontay Burton, Rashawn Thomas and vice versa. And, you know, Dozier, Hamilton. I'm like, man, these guys don't even know who these guys are. And they were calling Andre Robertson, Roberson when they had him on the broadcast. And I'm like, oh Lord, come
I didn't.
On, man.
I talked to Andre Robertson that day, and I was at that game, so that game I did not see on TV, so I didn't see the interview. But I had a lot of comments on Twitter about how that interview was maybe not the best. Didn't really understand his name, and also didn't really know a lot about how he played. It seemed like.
Yeah, like somebody said, I think the guy that wasn't Derek Fisher was saying something about him maybe reprising his role as the guy who can knock it down from the corner or something.
Like, yeah, that was the thing people were tweeting at me about, the corner three-pointer thing.
Yeah, he was alluding to, like, Andre Robertson being a good corner three-point shooter. And I was like, man, this guy didn't do his homework. Yeah. Somebody just pointed out to him, hey, that's Andre Robertson. Get him on the broadcast.
Yeah.
Or somebody was like, no, rather somebody was like, hey, there's Andre Robertson. Yeah. Get him on the broadcast.
Yeah. He's right there. Just grab him.
Yeah, get that Robertson fella. And then, you know, you saw the Thunder PR guy, Matt Tumbleson, like jump up and be like, all right, Andre, we got to go over here and do this interview. It's going to be great for the product or whatever.
Yeah. He made the rounds. I talked to him at halftime of that game. So yeah, he was getting around some.
But yeah, I don't even know what we were talking about. I guess we're talking about PJ Dozier being solid or whatever.
Is there anybody else on the summer league team? We you know who was good? I mean, he's not gonna be on the Thunder. But Rashawn Thomas was good. He played well.
Yeah.
He had a good summer league. I heard from some people out there that there's a lot of interest in Europe. I don't know if that's something that he's interested in or if he wants to ride it out in the G League, which is probably the easier path to the NBA. But like, he looked comfortable running the break, which was something I hadn't, you know, I didn't see a ton of Blue games. That he looked good doing that stuff. And at his size, he has some interesting skills. I can definitely see why a European team would look highly on him, because it seems like he could go over there and be really good. I don't think I think he's still a ways away from being like NBA ready, but he had a really nice summer league.
Yeah, I enjoyed some of the skills he showed, particularly, like you said, handling the ball on the break. I mean, we know he just, you know, eats rebounds, hustles really well. He's a guy who's going to get most of his stuff around the rim. I wonder how much the Oklahoma City thing plays in for him, because he's a guy who's from here and he has a unique opportunity to play for the G League team here and be close to family. You know, he's a guy who, you know, these coaches and these scouts know about, because he's been on the USA qualifying team for the FIBA World Cup, I guess, like a couple of years now. And Jeff Van Gundy's been around him, and he's been a guy who's known by these coaches and a lot of these scouts. So he's a guy who's going to have his opportunity. It's just tough for it's always going to be tough for a 6'5", 6'6" power forward to break in anywhere. I mean, overseas here, it's going to be difficult for that guy to really iron down like a top level spot. He's probably going to be a G League guy for probably the majority of his career, unless he goes overseas and does the overseas thing.
Yeah, and the overseas thing would pay him better. I mean, that would be part of the appeal of it. But he's like you said, he's the same height. He's about the same height as Deontay Burton. He might be a little taller, but Burton is like a better ball handler, and outweighs him by, like, I don't know. It looks like 50 pounds. Probably doesn't outweigh him by 50 pounds. But, like, he's just, you know, size-wise, he's just in a weird spot in the NBA.
Yeah. We haven't talked about Terrence Ferguson so much, I guess. But, yeah. You know, he's a guy that we came into the summer league with pretty high expectations. Yep. And as we mentioned, you know, they threw a bunch at him, had him handling the ball more, did not look comfortable doing that. But, I mean, the most disappointing thing for me is his shot just in not falling for him. But in that last game, he got into a little rhythm and hit a couple threes. So good for him for finding some rhythm and closing out the summer league, seeing some shots go down. But overall, I'd probably say it's kind of like an up-down, disappointing summer league for Terrence Ferguson, but it was necessary. And it's kind of some of the stuff that I talked about on a previous podcast in terms of the Thunder getting better, having to do things out of their comfort zone.
Yep.
Like, you're going to have to see some ugly basketball from some of these guys. And I'm talking about not just Terrence Ferguson. I'm talking about Russell Westbrook, too. I'm talking about all the guys on the team. If the Thunder wants to be a better team, they're going to have to do different things. There's a ceiling with the way that they've played in previous seasons. So Terrence Ferguson is going to have to handle the ball more. Terrence Ferguson is going to have to commit a ton of turnovers. He's going to have to miss shots that he's not comfortable taking. Like, it's going to be a process for him. And, you know, you'd rather that guy be doing that at 20-something years old than 29.
Yeah.
you gotta make a guy better.
Yeah, and you'd rather he be doing it in Las Vegas in July than anywhere, because, like, why not? You know, the games are meaningless. So just let him be uncomfortable. And I thought, actually, the one thing I didn't like about him the most in the first game out there, he didn't even look like he wanted to be doing that. He was so uncomfortable. And I do think he was more willing as the thing went on to just try to do it and make some mistakes with it. I thought that was good. You know, like, you know this, if you talk to people in the organization privately, they love that kid so much. They just like his work ethic and they like his approach and they like how coachable he is and all that stuff. And talking to people out there, it was all the same stuff. It was like, look, he knows this is a challenge and he knows he needs to get better at it and he knows he's playing terribly doing it. But, like, he doesn't care. He's like, what am I doing wrong? How do I get better at it? You know, he's got the right approach. And so, like, they're just not going to read much into it. As you said, we don't know if he's going to be a good NBA player. It's way too soon to tell, because his production last year wasn't great, and it was mostly a result of circumstance. But that's how you get to be good, is you get into the right circumstance. So we'll see. He might end up being an excellent player. He might be a starter caliber player, but we don't know that yet. And now is the time to kind of, for them to start to figure out what he is and try to figure out how to make him better. So, like, I just don't worry that much about what he did. I'm not saying he's a great player who has had a bad summer league. I'm saying, like, as you said, this is the process. This is how you figure out what he is.
Yeah. And I will say this, the positive I got from Terrence Ferguson in summer league was, For as good as a summer league defense can look, I thought he looked better and more comfortable defensively.
Yep.
I thought any time that he was on the floor and those young guys were on the floor, they worked really hard defensively. They weren't taking plays off in terms of their defense. So, you know, Terrence Ferguson's bought in. I'll say that much. And we don't know if he's actually going to be a good NBA player that can stick, but he's got the potential to be at 20 years old.
Yeah, and he also, I think he had a sort of a, for a 20-year-old guy, I think a lot of the guys on the team sort of looked to him because he does have the, I mean, weirdly, he's the most accomplished NBA player on that roster. And so, like, you know, those guys kind of looked to him as a guy who was, you know, leader is weird because it's summer league and what are you really leading? But, I mean, I do think he was kind of setting an example defensively. I think he was sort of the guy who was the voice of the team. And they like all that stuff. That, you know, there is nobody panicking about his summer league. Like, nobody cares, because he was doing stuff that, you know, like, as we've talked about a million times, he's got to get a little better with the ball. You've got to have him doing more stuff because he's such a good athlete. But, like, he's still only a 20-year-old guy in his second year. Most of what he's going to do this upcoming season, assuming he's not traded or something, is going to be the same kind of stuff. He's going to be playing off other good players.
Yeah. Now you could make an argument, Brett. You said that Terrence Ferguson was the most accomplished NBA player on the roster. You could make an argument for Dakari Johnson, who had some solid spot starts for Steven Adams. We saw Dakari Johnson, you know, pretty much beast in the first couple of games for the Thunder in Summer League.
Yeah.
They rested him the last two games. I guess it was pretty much pointless for them to play him those last couple of games. But, you know, kind of the same old stuff from Dakari Johnson. That's not a bad thing.
No, I wrote about it the first day of Summer League. Like, he's just going to get what he gets against this caliber of player. Like, he's really hard to stop because he's you know, he doesn't, he's a weird player. He's got pretty good post moves, enough that he can score. He can kind of bully you and get up a shot, even though he doesn't really get off the floor. He's going to get some shots blocked because he doesn't spring up fast. He's going to get to the free throw line. He's going to make some good passes. He's a really good passer. He's going to do what he does. Like, he is, you know, the question with Dakari is going to be, for, until he proves otherwise, is going to be like, is he, as I wrote in the story, is he like Crash Davis from Bull Durham? Is he just a guy who you put him in summer league or you put him in the G League and people can't stop him? He's an all G League player. He's a first team all the last year that it was the D League, I guess. He was a first team all G League. You know, you can't, those guys at that level have a really hard time with him, but the transition is hard. He doesn't move his feet well enough defensively. He's not a great athlete, so switching is a challenge. So, like, all the stuff that you need a modern day center to do at the NBA level, he doesn't do all that well. In 2005, yeah, he'd be a coveted player because he really is a good low post player and a really good passer who you could run some stuff out of. But, like, Steven Adams has great vision and is a terrific passer, and he doesn't get to do this that much because he, you know, you're playing with Westbrook. He's going to be the guy who's controlling the offense. So, like, I don't know that Dakari ever is going to be a guy who can really contribute to them, and maybe not even really contribute in the NBA because he just it's just a different game than what he's really good at, and he's really good at what he does.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we saw some of that stuff that we typically see when Dakari Johnson gets a chance to play in summer league, you know, handling the ball in the open court. Yeah.
Mark Daigneault loves that. He loves playing him in that position. And Mark, I talked to Mark about it. He just thinks he's a really good, high IQ, smart passer. He likes him doing that. And he's like, that stuff, he could do that at the NBA level. Like, not bringing the ball up the floor, but like having the ball and like having cutters play off him, he could do that. Again, it's not really the way the Thunder plays. But that was an interesting thing. You know, the Thunder takes a lot of credit and deserves a lot of credit in some cases for how some guys develop. Like, look at Jeremy Grant and like his development as a player. Like Mark was saying, the stuff, the offensive stuff with Dakari, they really haven't taught him that much. He came fully formed with all that stuff. The basketball IQ stuff is like, he didn't learn that in college. You just have that. You just kind of have a feel, and he does have a feel.
Now, quick hits on, let's get Kevin Hervey and Devin Hall out of the way. But before we get to Carmelo Anthony, I think you saw a little burst of what those guys can do. You know, Hervey can hit a variety of shots at 6'9". You know, he's got a good looking stroke. You'd like to see it fall more, but I think, you know, he started off hot in the third game against Memphis. He hit maybe his first three shots,
yeah,
and then he kind of cooled off after that. Hall, similar guy who can, I mean, not similar in size. He's 6'5 compared to 6'9, but he can catch fire. He hit three threes in the last game. He had another game where he hit a cluster of threes. Considering Hall didn't have a lot of looks, I thought he was pretty efficient. A little bit smaller than I thought he would be in of his physicalness.
Hervey's bigger than I thought, too. Hervey's just more like imposing.
But each of those guys look like, you know, blue players.
Yeah.
Guys that are going to go through the program as the Thunder likes. I think I might have projected Hall a little bit more than I thought because of his Virginia background. We'll see what happens in training camp. He might end up being on the training camp roster, which means that, you know, he'd be a free agent if he got weighed by the Thunder, which is a risky proposition. But, you know, it's going to be something that's a wait and see on them, but I'd expect them to be G League guys.
Yeah. An interesting thing Mark Daigneault said, we've talked a lot since they drafted Hall about the Virginia system and how those guys are such good defenders and hard-nosed defenders, and they have a tendency to kind of stick in the league and be a little better than people thought. One thing Mark said is that in some ways that can be a detriment. Virginia has some very specific schematic things they do. One of those things is the way, and I didn't get into specifics on this, but it's the way they guard the pick and roll. It's different than the way most NBA teams do it and the way the Thunder does it. So there's a lot of terminology stuff and just habits and things like that that he formed at Virginia that really work for what Virginia does. They're good defensively, but it's not what you do at this level. And that's been a little bit of a challenge for him. So while he has a lot of good defensive fundamentals, he has a lot to learn about how you play defense in the NBA. And I think that's where we sort of thought he might come in a little ahead of the game, is at that end of the floor, just because of that Virginia pedigree. And Mark Daigneault said kind of the opposite. He's probably got a little more learning to do than some guys do because of the specificity of that system. So I do think he's got a lot of work to do. Hervey's interesting just because, like, that size and that ability to make a shot, you know, a three-pointer. If you look at their roster, the way it's constructed right now, and it's probably going to change some, but, like, you know, they're a little backcourt and center heavy, and that middle area is where they don't have a ton of guys. Like, they're not just like loaded up with small forward types, and he's more of a stretch four. But like, you know, he would sort of fit, but I don't know what he does on this team that like Patrick Patterson and Jeremy Grant don't kind of cover.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Herbie's the defender you want out there in the perimeter. He doesn't look like he's got the length, but I don't see anything particularly outstanding from him defensively that he's going to be able to just switch and stay in front of a ton of guys on the perimeter. It kind of looks a little Carmelo-esque in the way he gets his offense and what he can do defensively. So I don't know where his place is there. They might just want to take a year with him and see how he develops in the G League from there. But I was okay about those guys. Those guys were just okay. You know, they looked fine. The little spurts they had, Hall at times disappears. I think Herbie disappears at times too. But they didn't really show me anything that wasn't expected. But Herbie showed me a good jump shot, which I saw in video.
Yeah.
And Hall showed the ability to make a three-pointer at times too. So those were positives for me.
Yeah, to me, like what you're looking for from guys at that, who are like second round picks, that caliber of player. Like, you just want to see, do they have an NBA skill? Do they have something that translates? And like, maybe Hervey's jump shot will. And if it does, you can kind of work with the other stuff. And like, maybe Hall defensively, and maybe his shot, like maybe that comes around in time. Like, this goes back to what we said about Diallo. He has NBA athleticism. It's real obvious. Like, that, you look at him and say, okay, that is going to go to the next level. Like, he can compete athletically with anybody in the league. Those guys don't have any one thing where you say that is definitely going to work at the next level, which is why I think he's probably significantly more likely to land a roster spot than those two guys in the first year.
All right, Carmelo time. You ready?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
My Carmelo alarm is going. It's been too long since we talked about Carmelo.
You know, I wrote something yesterday for News OK, just kind of where the Thunder stands in terms of the Carmelo Anthony trade. And the landscape's kind of changed in the past 24 hours because the Bulls have actually offered restricted free agent Jabari Parker, which in theory, if they get Jabari Parker, that's going to take up some of this $20 million in cap space that the Bulls have cleared. And the Bulls looked like one of those teams that could potentially absorb some of Carmelo Anthony's salary without sending back a ton of salary in return, which would be a benefit for the Thunder in a sense that, one, they wouldn't have to take back an entire $28 million. They'd save some money, and they'd also get back a semi-decent player for getting Carmelo Anthony off of their books. But I think the main thing I took from writing the piece I wrote yesterday was, this thing has time. It August 31st is a lot of time for the Thunder to explore as many trade options as possible. And August 31st, I think we talked about on the podcast before, is the last day that the Thunder can decide to use the stretch provision to stretch out Carmelo Anthony's contract over the next three seasons. And that would alleviate their tax bill, but it would also basically be, giving up on Carmelo, saying that's dead money, and not being able to get a prospect or a player for him in a trade. So they're going to explore the trade as long as they possibly can. Would they like to get it done sooner rather than later? Yeah, but it's not something that has to be done, tomorrow or the next day.
Right.
They're going to try and see what's the best fit in terms of players that they can get back while also, trying to find as best a situation as possible for them to get an asset back for Carmelo's contract.
Right, and that's why they let Carmelo go ahead and talk to teams. That's why they gave him permission to talk to anybody he wants to. Because basically the message to Carmelo is, figure out where you want to go, and he could know that today. I mean, we don't know if he does. But like, he can decide that, and then all it is the Thunder's going to get him there. So they're going to tell him, "Will you pick your team, and then we're either going to find a trade with that team," which is fairly unlikely. Or, I mean, there are some options there with Miami, I guess. Or we're going to find a trade where you get waived immediately and you can go sign with that team. So the trick here is they're not holding up Carmelo. Both parties have been very cooperative. This is going to be an amicable parting, at least publicly. Who knows? Like, Carmelo might go to media day with his new team and just trash the Thunder. Who knows? But like, for right now, they're working together. They're doing what each party's doing what the other wants, and Carmelo is allowed to, like, Carmelo could say today where he wants to go. He could tell that team, and he'll eventually get to that team. But, you know, and he knows it'll happen by August 31st. So there's no, you know, there's just not a big rush on either side. And for the Thunder, they've got to try to find a trade. Essentially, they have to find a trade that's better than saving $100 million. So it's got to be a pretty decent trade. They have to get something. It has to do something for them. Either that means, you know, okay, well, we don't have to stretch it, so we get some more, you know, we get a little lower in the tax the next year or the year after or whatever, or we get to take something back that we're interested in or whatever. They've just got to find something that they say, on balance, this is better than saving $100 million. That's not easy to do because it's $100 million.
Yeah, and I think this is something I learned in the past few weeks, just like talking to people in their organization and around that situation, is that it's not necessarily a, okay, the main objective is we have to save $100 million. The main objective is to make the team better.
Yes, absolutely.
And if making the team better means you have to take on two contracts that are, you know, equivalent to Carmelo Anthony's $28 million and you have to pay a massive tax bill, if you make the team better, then I think the Thunder is willing to do that.
Yeah. The thing that's out there is like, could they get Kevin Love? Okay. Like that's what everybody wants to know. Could they get Kevin Love? I don't know.
And wait. And by Kevin, you mean Kevin Love? Because I think you just said Kevin. Did you just call him first name? Kevin?
No, I said Kevin Love, but might not have.
Okay, I might have
muted out there. But like, okay. No, like Kevin Love is the piece out there that like everybody would say because you just look at the salaries and is Cleveland going to try to tank? And I don't know. There's a ton of incentive for Cleveland, but that's the guy who's just sort of out there as a big name. Like they would go get Kevin Love and just figure it out. Like they would take that money back and just figure out what to do. I mean, like nobody's told me that, but I believe that to be the case. Like, why wouldn't you? They're not afraid of taking on money. They will cut the money somewhere else. So like if you might trade for a player who makes another piece redundant. So like they're already probably going to try to move Kyle Singler like into somebody's cap space or maybe stretch him or something. But like, so if you add a power forward who can shoot, well, maybe Patrick Patterson now becomes a guy who could move. If you get another wing player, maybe you could move Alex Abrines. So they can find other ways to cut the costs if the Carmelo trade ends up making them better by bringing in money.
Yeah. The team is going to be expensive, whether they have Carmelo Anthony or not. There's sort of a middle ground they could hit in a trade if they trade with a team that, you know, has cap space. They'll probably still be taking on a gargantuan amount of tax, but it's not going to be $150 million in tax. It might be something closer to $70 or $60 million in tax because they're still going to be taking on a player whose salary is going to be multiplied by however much is the multiplier when you get into that tax rate. And it's going to be an expensive team. Like, I think that people have just need to accept the fact that this team is going to be very expensive and they're probably not going to win an NBA championship. I think the Thunder is completely prepared for that as well. But if you can get pieces back that can help you in the next 3 years or 4 years that you have Russell Westbrook and Paul George locked up long-term, and not just in terms of like winning, but maybe parlaying those pieces into another big piece, because there are going to be some teams that are going to be looking around with free agency coming in 2019 and saying, okay, do we want to lose this guy for nothing? Or do we need to parlay this guy before he opts out of his contract into something else? You know, guys like Jimmy Butler, a Kyrie Irving. Don't ask me how Kyrie Irving and Russell Westbrook work together. I'm just throwing out guys who have contracts that are going to be up in a year because they have opt-outs in their contract and they could decline their last year of their option. I guess maybe Klay Thompson might be one of those guys too, but I think Klay Thompson's perfectly comfortable in Golden State. The point is, there are going to be a lot of guys out there in the next year or so who are going to be coming up on contracts where if you collect assets, you need to have as many assets as possible to where you could potentially go to another team and say, look, if you're not going to be able to re-sign this guy, how can we help you get value for this guy? So you can't just look at it as, oh, the Thunder got back so-and-so and so-and-so from Miami, that's not going to make them any better than the Warriors. Yeah, but we didn't think that, you know, Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott were going to make the Thunder better than the Warriors.
Right.
It's a matter of having assets that look palatable to other teams. Like, look, you let Taj Gibson walk, but you also use, you know, Doug McDermott to get Carmelo Anthony. Now, the Carmelo Anthony thing obviously didn't work, but you can also now use Carmelo Anthony to potentially get another chip.
Right. Yeah, so that, I mean, what we know is that they are going to be very expensive, and they are not going to be $310 million expensive. Like, that's going to come down one way or another. However they end up doing the Carmelo thing, however they end up making moves around it, like, they'll come way down off that. And other than that, it's not your money, so, you know, let them spend it. It's not going to really impact, you know, what you don't want them to do is get locked into real bad contracts that are going to impact them going forward. But the fact of the matter is, their three core players are at like 25, 30, and 35 million coming up. So, like, they're going to be pretty locked in anyway. You know, there's not a whole lot they could do. They don't have a ton of flexibility going forward, regardless of what they do, barring trading one of those three guys, which, I mean, they could trade Steven Adams. They're not going to trade one of the other two guys.
Yeah. And it's a scenario that pretty much all the teams at the top of the league face. All these teams typically have three guys that are under massive contracts, and there's not much you can do to avoid that if you have a good team.
Right. Cap's going to go up a little. The cap will go up some, and that'll help. We won't ever have another spike, I don't think, like the 2016 spike. I don't think anybody wants that, really. I mean, maybe Michelle Roberts does, but I think she's just kind of retroactively defending that. Nobody thinks the cap spike was really a good thing because it created the Warriors. But, like, as the gambling money comes in and all that stuff, I would expect that we're going to see increases incrementally in that. So you're going to have, like, that'll help you a little. But this is the price of doing business. I forget who it was the other day. I think it was Danny Ainge was just talking about, you know, like, some moves that cut costs or whatever. And Danny Ainge said the Celtics are, like, we're going to be in the tax. That's life now. We're fine. That's the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the cost to win. It's the cost to win. I don't have a lot much more to say. We'll see what happens with Carmelo, and obviously whenever he gets sent to wherever he's going, we will jump back on the podcast and talk about that.
I'm going to plug my story real fast. I have a story on Nerlens Noel in Sunday's Oklahoman, which will probably be online sometime Saturday. Read that if you want to. Talk to him for a little while. Talk to him about kind of where he is in his career. It's been a disappointment to this point. There are always whispers about how hard he's willing to work and whether he's kind of a malcontent. At least that was the malcontent thing comes more from the Sixers. The work ethic thing has sort of dogged him for his whole career. He's not a big believer in that stuff. He's aware that it's out there. And he kind of chose the Thunder in part because he wanted to be somewhere where he could be on a winning team and see what a winning team does to complement what he does and how he can sort of be the guy he was in college when, you know, as Billy Donovan points out, when he was at Kentucky, they were a pretty good team. Then he gets hurt at Florida and they kind of go in the tank. And Billy said he always thought that spoke to sort of his competitiveness and what he did for a winning team. So, you know, he's in a situation where he's going to try to have that impact in the NBA for somebody that's trying to win something, and he's never been in that situation before. So maybe that helps him. Maybe it doesn't. He's on a cheap contract. We'll see.
Yeah, and he's got an opportunity here to be that number two center. Just to, you know, kind of tease a little bit of your story, great hot dog stories in the Nerlens Noel piece.
Yeah, the hot dog. I didn't get the hot dog in the first time I wrote about Nerlens, so I had to make sure that I got the hot dog in.
Yeah, no matter what happens in Nerlens Noel's career, he will always be connected to hot dogs in some way, shape, or form. Hopefully he can parlay that into some kind of sponsorship deal with, like, Johnsonville Brats or something. I don't know. It would be cool if he could. But
we have, like, a famous hot dog place in Oklahoma City. Like New Orleans has Dat Dog, but, I don't know that there's, like, a famous place here.
There's Mutt's on 23rd.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if I should be shamelessly plugging people, whatever. It's a good spot. Yeah. But please check out Brett's work on newsok.com and in the Oklahoma. He did a great job at Summer League this past week. Just wrote a ton of great stories about the Thunder's philosophy going into this season, and if it's going to pan out, I would be very skeptical. Nerlens Noel, you know, writing about Terrence Ferguson, Daniel Hamilton's development. Brett wrote a ton of great stories from his time in Las Vegas, so please check him out.
Also, if you're, like, a coach or, like, you do any kind of leadership stuff, or you're, like, a teacher, anybody who, like, you have to lead a group of people, even whether in your business or whatever, like Mark Degnault's, we did our collective wisdom feature that we do every week. He's got really interesting thoughts about kind of leading people and coaching and his philosophies and his influences, and that will be in Sunday's paper as well. And I just, like, that was, like, I mean, Eric, you've done these collective wisdoms a bunch. Sometimes those things get out of hand. I think I talked to him for 45 minutes, and you end up using, like, a third of what the guy says. But it's pretty interesting stuff, and I think people will be sort of fascinated by the people that influence him, including Bruce Springsteen, who's like a huge influence on his coaching. And that's kind of weird, but interesting. So I would also check that out.
Best player you saw in Summer League?
Oh, that's a good question. So weirdly, people asked that question when I was out there, and I was like, you know, I really kind of just watched the Thunder games, and then I kind of just float around a little. So like the best player I saw, probably the most talented player might have been Mo Bamba, but he was just like okay the day I saw him. So like in terms of who played the best when I was there, it was probably Kevin Knox. Because he was good. He was much better. I think Knox was way better relative to expectations than a lot of the other rookies. I did not think he was going to be that good. So he played really well in two games that I saw. So like I was actually there watching him twice, and he played really well. So I don't think he was the best player there, but he probably played the best when I was watching.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to watch a ton of games, and I'm going to try and watch some more in these last few days. But I really like Knox for what I've seen from him. He's got a better three-point shot than I thought he'd have. And Jaren Jackson in that game against the Thunder, he was impressive.
He's good. He's really good.
He didn't fill it up the way he did in that first debut game. I think he hit like 8 threes in his first game or something.
Yeah, that was that was either in Salt Lake or Sacramento. I can't remember where they were, but yeah. He may never do that again in his life. He may never make 8 threes in a game again.
For an 18-year-old,
yeah.
His presence on the defensive end and offensively, his ability to pass and create and the touch he has, you can tell Memphis made a really good pick with him. He's going to be really special. It's going to be interesting to see how he lines up next to Marc Gasol. But I think that Marc Gasol is a good enough player too, to where those two are going to really work well together.
Yeah.
He's just got so much potential. And I was just stunned to see a guy that young have that much command of a game without really demanding the ball that much. But just, it was just obvious how good of a player he was when he was on the floor. He was the best player on the floor in that Thunder Memphis game every time he was out there.
Yeah, I liked a lot of stuff from Trae Young. He obviously didn't shoot the ball well until the very end. But like the one thing I think you could sort of see if you were watching Trae, and obviously we were watching him some, I don't know how much you watched him this year, but I watched some games. I probably watched Oklahoma 7 or 8 times. The one thing I think you knew about him, he's a really good passer, and like, not to just dump all over those guys at Oklahoma, but it was kind of like, oh, well, you know, like your passing is great, but who's going to make a play once you give them the ball? And like, it was different. It's different at this level. You know, like he got to play with John Collins, who I think is a really good player. Like he's going to be he might have been the best player I saw, honestly. You know, like a second year guy who's going to be, you know, a rotation player in the league. Like he's really good. And so like that's a nice, they have a nice little chemistry going. Trey's vision is going to matter more at this level. Like, cause he's just got, you know, he's just playing with better finishers. It's the nature of the beast. He's at a higher level, and Oklahoma doesn't have other McDonald's All-Americans. And so like, this is different for him. So, you know, I was impressed with some stuff from him. Malik Monk was really good in that game against the Thunder, and then he got hurt. So there were fun guys to watch. It's Summer League is a weird deal because it is hard to watch a lot of games because you end up, there's just so many people there, and you end up wanting to talk to people. So you're kind of talking to scouts, and you're kind of saying, like, what do you think about this? And people want to talk to you about, like, Paul George, and then, like, you know, other people are coming up to ask you about Carmelo. And it's you do a lot more talking than you do watching basketball, honestly.
Yeah. I feel like I've done a lot more talking this week than watching basketball, and I wasn't even there.
Yeah, that's true. That's some long podcasts, too. Like, so, yeah, that's a lot of – we've done a lot of talking. We've done a lot of mellowing and a lot of talking.
All right. Sounds good to me, man.
All right. So let's wrap it up. That'll do it. We'll be back. We will be back at some point in the upcoming week, regardless of what happens. If something happens with Carmelo, we will make a podcast happen. You know, if it happens like at night or something, who knows if we'll get to you right away. But we will get a Carmelo Anthony podcast if anything happens with him. Other than that, we'll come back and talk about some other stuff this week. There's roster stuff to talk about. There's other summer things. We're getting to the point where things will slow down, but not yet. The Thunder still got stuff to do, obviously, with Carmelo and all that. So we'll be around to talk about that stuff. Until then, check out all of our stuff every day in the Oklahoman and at newsok.com. Rate us. Subscribe to this podcast, please. Give us 5 stars. Tell everybody about us. Spread the word. And we will talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us.